To all of you, thank you for coming, and for all of you who didn't come, thank you for coming in some form or another. I want to start with saying something about how everything might fit together here today. And one thing is that, just a bit of information, I'm from a very, very small coal mining town. And in that town, once the coal mines closed in about 1960, all the men and all the women went to work in this rich area, doing domestic work and kind of yard work, handyman type things. So this is kind of like, not only in a sense my personal history, but also the history of my small town. But I think as I read that some of the, I guess, information will kind of fall, overlap, kind of get interlocked. There's one other item that in the 60s, my dad was beaten by cops and put in insane asylum for 6.5 years. So I'll be kind of like coal miner, insane asylum, domestic work, and then just a little bit about me in there, in between all that, or how I felt about things, or how I almost felt about things. And indulge me, I was preparing today, and I was thinking, I have to read this. So indulge me. I didn't choose everything, by the way. So my first poem is entitled Mad Dog Wind. I keep hearing that mad dog wind howl through the valley, scratch at windows of company store houses, rattle bone chimes long empty of marrow. It is the sound of my father's bed written big for air, the sanctified preacher's mouth full of prayer. It must have been the way the wind's cool wet hands bent the screen door back until it creaked like lungs pressed against 40 years of December ice. A boxcar full of storm horses is headed this way. Some old hooded coal miner hangs on, arms wrapped around one slick neck, hugs the rail until coal dust in air sacs is wrought with black disease. It must have been the way the wind rattled the screen door that makes me hear my father's breath. Slow draw in, a steady release of pick and shovel life to machines that lend steady push pull of air into cavities being eaten by the creeping dark of the coal mines. Funny how it all begins to come back to me, what I didn't see. His aluminum lunch pail empty on the shelf, gray work pants folded away, boots with bituminous scars that say skin over pain is never a pretty thing. And funny, until now I hadn't noticed my father had grown old, not even with months before he asked for a cane, hadn't noticed the knee of his right leg could hardly bend up the back steps, just saw the smile he worked his face so hard to make. I'm just gonna keep going. The next poem is a sequence number 725. And this is taken from the Lucky Star Dream Book, which is a little book that has numbers, and when you dream something, you look up that number and it tells you, if you dream of this, then this. And at that time, and maybe still today, but in my hometown, all the women had one of these books. So when they dreamed something, they would play the numbers.
I think you can still get them at your meetings.
I have one. So this is the sequence number 725. To dream of a colored person is an excellent dream for all. It promises extraordinary good health. To those in business, great success. To prisoners, a speedy release. To the brokenhearted, courage. Black women have domestic business. $8 a day, knees not on linoleum. 5 days a week, ankles swell, extra on Saturdays. Saturday in June, bees buzz. A man drives a woman to work at the rich lady's. 52 pickup is red, used for handmade business, planting saplings, forsythia, bulbs, seeds of maybe. Number 506, Hunt. Criminally insane, they said. Talked to a white woman, criminal act. Rich hands exchange language of money to put a man in his place. Two plainclothes city policemen, two small town cops lurk in bushes. Funny how they hunt, hide, jump out of weeds, guns drawn, fist, kick, scuffle, cuffs. The hunted man's skin, thick, black, drive you crazy dark, split, swollen. Goddamn crazy nigger, put him away until he learns how to act, they said. This fourth poem, Beauty's Habit, epigraph. The big gym orgies, they, he and his friends, always chose the prettiest of young women. This poem is for Norfolk, Virginia, born in 1847, death unknown. And this poem is for us, whose deaths too are unknown. There was something achingly beautiful in the way we huddled so close that summer, my sister and I, my brother and us. Our skin touched, nursed a hurt so deep, I went looking for it in the hollow of rock formations at the bony dump. I thought if I put my ear at the edge of fossilized holes, I might hear my father breathing, maybe snoring, head thrown back in his scratchy green chair, like when he came up out of the coal mines, tired and dipped black. The Daily Post-Gazette sprawled over his lap, thin as quiet, a blanket of words crumpled over and fit together in new patterns of meaning. What did it mean that a man was dragged in a regular habit, that a wife sat statue in a red pickup as men beat her husband? Nothing bound her delicate wrist but fear, which was wholly beautiful, large, inquisitive eyes, childlike, lip muscles pressed together, blood pink jaw attractively severe. No slip of scream, worse, no fight back words. It was easy for three men to silence a woman, to drag one man away from family. The woman forced to watch their festive debaucheries until they turned on her warm magenta, her sugar mouth. Fact is now, we be sitting on the front porch when she, the rich lady, pulls up, her half-green grin say, she saw up into our nappy heads from her wood-paneled station wagon, its forest green, deep enough to consume our dreams if there's enough room in the back seat. After all, mamas get in. After all, they have been working nonstop to keep a black home and a white home, two homes in just one day. Every day they leave from front doors, enter through back doors. And we count how many swollen ankles it takes to make the rich lady smile, her white teeth perfect, straight across the uppers and lowers click, shut like the black back door, and we wave bye-bye to our mamas, who sit shoulder to shoulder like sardines in a can. Can't nobody move, like when the police say, don't move, or I'll shoot. Don't move like dead, stiff, like when the ship sailed, everybody packed in so tight. Can't nobody move. Can't get up and pee or shit. Just chained down to memory, we are on the front porch watching the cars exhaust, leave a trail of inexhaustible facts in history books, clogging up the truth be told. And can't nobody read between the lines and let alone see us for who we are. People, not like everybody else who came to this land for opportunity to dream big. And it need not be said that the coming of mamas was involuntary as manslaughter, unpremeditated but planned. So well, can nobody dispute the true fact that when the rich lady's car went out of sight, we prayed like hell. Text message. I like this poem. It's about Frankie Burke. He passed away. He was my first boyfriend. I'm going to read this. I had just turned 16, June the year before. Cops beat my father, Frank. Packed him away as frozen meat at Farview State Hospital for the criminally insane. So crazy, they said, that he dared think he could speak using his own tongue, voice his name. Say, like Frankie Burke did when he came to the front door early Saturday evening. Already dark, no porch light. So I asked, who is it? Like my father said I should do, before opening the door at night to any knock of knuckle on the flat chest of the wooden frame. The voice on the other side said, it's me, Frankie. I said, Frankie who? I was kidding, but it was not fun living with one on the other side, because inside my head I was thinking of my father, Frank, who played, pretended his voice was hollow air as his tongue muscled pills beneath words, made them roll over, play dead, so he could survive the asylum upright on 2 feet, not like the monster belly scraping the floor under my bed, or the shapeless one under a heap of clothes in the back room closet next to the bed my mother and father lay locked in love. When I unlocked the door, Frankie stood with a brown paper bag in his hand, extended his right arm. I took the bag knowing there was a gift inside. I pulled a box from the bag, opened it. Laying side by side were two spool heel shoes, the deep burgundy color of my father's brown skin. Each felt as soft as it looked under the dim living room light, and I wanted to say yes to the way Frankie's hand begged mine, as if he knew he would never touch me the way a 16-year-old boy could. My father said never take a gift from a boy. It was something a girl shouldn't do. So I asked my mother, can I take these shoes from Frankie? She said, Frankie who? She looked over the shoes with hard-worked knuckles, dreamy-eyed as if this Frankie was my father, Frank, bringing her a gift this first year and 5 months without him. Frank, who lay locked on the other side of sanity. And in his absence, my mother had become strong enough to speak up with strength of my mother's father's voice. She said, you keep these shoes. They're nice. Now this is sequence number 112 and 500. To see bright lights burning denotes great learning. It also promises great success. One should follow up on plans, put them into action. For half a dozen, 6 in 1 hand, years, my mother blows breath into me, puffs cigarettes, sips coffee. Cigarette and coffee, smoke and sip, cig and cig, cigarette and cancer. The bear waits at the back door, hibernates in mama's lungs. Sleep now, if I can, dream in the white space. White, nothing. Space is nowhere. Half empty is half a dozen 6 in 1 hand years. My father shipped to Farview State Hospital, packed like meat, frozen, stored until lucky to be alive, limbs thaw. My father sits out back, remakes the landscape, refigures the figure. Not strange fruit hanging, but the tree itself, daring to stretch roots. See how they're starting to tumble over each other? 8, exhumed. Decades later, what would battered words say about severe beatings? A cover-up autopsy that never recorded all of Thomas Garrett's organs gone. Even the brain removed, replaced with crumpled newspaper, sports section, cover story, classifieds, all bald wads thrown into a bone cavity. Fine print details, too gruesome to lay eyes on. Thomas Garrett could have been my father. At Farview State Hospital, my father could have been Thomas Garrett. Thomas Garrett's body lifted to light, a mere form determined to have been human. Nothing inside an empty mouth to speak. Made up facts recorded and reported. T. Garrett's dead of a pulmonary embolism. So what need had there been for healing 2 ribs broken still after 20 years? There is no other way to say it than to say it. Thomas Garrett's body could have been my father's. Thomas Garrett's bones plucked from the dead, same as my father's bones. Thomas Garrett was killed at Farview State Hospital for guard sport, the way a man throws a stick, the way his dog fetches, too plain into late evening, past time when keen eyes of animals begin to fail, cannot discern between the stick thrown, the stick already there. T. Garrett's body was like that, decomposed, some dust bones left with their telltale marrow. I prayed and prayed until the day my father came home, near empty man, had to start from scratch of dirt, begin to live again. Exhumed secrets deep in T. Garrett's body rise from Pruchet dust. What say discarded organs, the heart, the liver, the kidneys, stomach, spleen, the lungs as they push against an uprooted tongue or the broken backstory along the spine? How guards train men to cockfight to the death or die, each body battered for pleasure, wager, and tease. My father held years of institutional dope pressed under his tongue, played at acting deranged, beat the guards at their own fetch game. Thomas Garrett's bones brought to light brutal beatings by guards' hands. My father came home to use his hands, shape his flesh into a man again. So quiet. Bête noire. Who is the black beast now, hungry for the flesh? Who is a monster, and who is not an angel? The same level of evil, frontwards and backwards, coming and going. Let evil live. Did he come out alive, the journalist asks. Yes, that's what he said. Yes, that's what I answered. I was still trying to put my feet on the floor, trying to get my head back in orbit. I was a helpless child born on the hump side of bituminous coal, so black midnight just as well be called dawn. I begged the coal demon, make me an angel, a real one with an iron staff, cloven feet, wings, not feathery, but the spiked kind, that cut small slashes quick, enough to make wounds bleed slow, sharp, like what I feel when I'm breathless with hurt, and no amount of face drowned in breast can take it away. What the journalist said finally hit me, like when the mine shaft shifted, crumbled down black stars, pummeled Mr. Skinny, beat him until he screamed, run, 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 Frank, run. Skinny took death's beat down, but not my father. He came up out of the dark hole of the criminally insane asylum alive, knowing the reaper rides the underside of every breath. And that's what the man meant when he asked, did he come out alive? Said, some didn't, some died in there. All I cared about was my father and how he was going to live under shadows of bête noire monster men, and how he didn't want anything to do with heaven, just wanted to live in as much light as he could, face the black beast eye to mouth, teeth to tongue, man to man. In my last poem, this is my last one. Yeah, well, almost last. Is this too much? I mean time-wise. Oh, I thought you say stop, stop, stop. Okay, bony dump. In the hospital bed, my mother sleeps the dead sleep. Thin skin hugs the bones. No fatty tissue, no muscles. Just narrow streams of blood running their course like the small creek at the edge of the bony dump. So heavily drugged with pain meds, my brother looks with envy, says she's so high, with a pure, I wish it were me, crack-addicted smile on his face. And my mother, when she finally comes to, she never wakes up to where she is or who I am, but she knows she isn't home, and the gadget clipped on the tip of her right index finger is clothes-like, smaller and stubbier than the clothespins she used to hold wet clothes to the backyard clothesline on Wednesday wash day. The oximeter clothespin monitors measures oxygen in the blood, the thick dust air of the coal mine hovering over the bony dump where cinders burn to smoldering ash just beyond the railroad tracks behind our house. So matter-of-factly, my mother says I want to go home, that in some weird way I feel how a boat made of newspaper must feel as it bobbles down the ditch on rainwater. In my mind, I know she means home to our prefab house with four rooms that interlock, fit like pieces of a puzzle that hold us together as family. You can't go home yet, I say. You've just had a hip replacement. Just take me to the bottom of the hill and I'll walk up. But Mom, you've only got one good leg, I say. I'll put the other in a bag and carry it up. Always determined and carried so much of me. I laugh a keep from crying laugh. Under other circumstances, I would have laughed hard, held my stomach to keep it from falling out of my body. But I'm having a different kind of out-of-body experience. When my mother tells me to cover the two babies in a basket at the foot of her bed, straighten the blankets around them, I do. Pretend and say, "There, there, little sweeties," so my mother knows the babies are fine. "Okay, hun, hand me that." She points with her whole arm, a tired lever that plops to the bed. It's the oximeter clothespin that came off during fluff and fuss and fuss of blankets. The beam of light is a dot of red. I clip it to my mother's finger. She brings it to her lips and takes a drag. I say, "Mama, that's not a cigarette." She doesn't say anything. Holds it so tight I can't wrestle it from her. She just keeps inhaling her habits, like always, enjoying a smoke on the back porch, gazing out over the bony dump. And then my last poem is Variation. One, I am my father's tongue. One pink variation from being beaten with a beautifully shaped club. A solid hickory of hate, petrified stony hard, to stifle words that leap from the mouth, dive beneath the skin. I say touch here, where two lie bumps pulse, white-tipped as a red-hot poker that burns silence into the skin. Mark's men, who pulled my father from his pickup, beat him due to variation on the meaning of voice from 100 to 1/16th percent echo found in the blood. The lie bumps shoot pain, even when the sweetest taste roll over them. How those cops must have loved the scroll of my father's blood, the bedtime story their knuckles would tell, teach their children to savor this standard deviation of aftertaste. Even before I learned the lies, my father licked his own lesions to heal me. 5 grains of salt placed on the tip of his index finger until granules huddled inside the spittle formed a pasty asphetida pressed against utterance geneticized with intent to deviate from true north. A slight etymologic derivation of how free speech means pull here where the rope is slack, and a mute man tongue will slip sideways. 2, I am my father's articulate female tongue, which cannot be unlearned. I am the thick thigh voice of omission, the fat back talk of 3/5 torso, 1/8 red, black blood, and a straight up mouthful of words that are straight up uppity, troublesome to some. I don't humble down, play shut mouth, or lay low my tongue until I have outdogged the dogs and the hounds have quieted their blood. I say, "See here," at the tip of my tongue. I nurse 2 white festered bumps full of lies that burn like hell, and for a few days the small inflammations will be tender. Truth is, my father's salty fingertip on my tongue is ceremony, a burning of memory into my flesh. Beautiful black fathers, hundreds of heads exquisite beneath the bow, shoulders relaxed, their feet still. I say, "Look here, see medicine for the years to come. Look right here at this," and point to spots on my tongue where my father's love scarred, marked me variation. Thank you. Thank you.